This episode of the Potato Field with Spudman is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They are dedicated to the continued development of new and improved post-harvest chemical applications through collaborative efforts with leading university researchers and private industry. Find out more at 1-4-group.com. Welcome to the Potato Field with Spudman. I am your host, Zeke Jennings, editor of Spudman Magazine. Joining me today is the CEO of Norcota Packers, which is headquartered in the Red River Valley in North Dakota, Carissa Olson. Carissa, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Could you just give a bit of a bird's eye view of what Norcota Packers does and how you fit into the potato supply chain?
Sure. So Norcota Packers is located in Buxton, North Dakota. So we're basically right in the heart of the Red River Valley. We are a premium red supplier. We have growers who grow for us. They grow about in a 100-mile radius or so from Buxton. Up north as far as the Grafton-Minto area, St. Thomas, south to Hillsboro, and then kind of in and around Buxton. They're all contracted for acres for us. We don't grow any of our own potatoes. And then we do broker some yellows, but we don't wash, pack, or ship any of them out of our shed. We typically ship, you know, mid-September to late April. And supply all of our customers during that time. We do some brokering after our season and then out of Minnesota when they start shipping out of that area as well. We do all mostly probably 90% private label packaging now. We do a little bit of our own label in some 50-pound bags, but that's about it. We package 3-pounders all the way up to your 2,200-pound totes and ship pretty much all over the country, really.
Do you know off the top of your head about how many growers or farms you contract with in a given year?
Yep. So right now we are at 5. Okay. We've been right around 5 or 6, probably the last 5 to 6 years. Back when they first started in 1979, for the first 10 or 15 years, they had upwards to 15 to 18 growers. But we've really kind of pared that down over the years and work with around 5 or 6 on any given year.
Well, that's common just for the industry in general. I think the number of farms has shrunk while the size of the farm has gotten bigger. And we've gotten a lot better at farming, and our yields have gone through the roof, haven't they?
Yep, definitely.
Now, Norcota is part of the Fresh Solutions Network, which is a larger organization that deals with a lot of people like yourselves, a lot of farms, and supplies all sorts of potatoes. How does your partnership with them work, and how do you fit into what they do?
Yeah, so FSN is a partnership of all family farmers. We're located also spread out throughout the country. So the really neat thing about the network is we can collaborate with each other and be able to service our customers year round. Even though we only ship for a portion of the calendar year, we can make it work through our partners to ship all year round. We also then, since we only ship reds, can work with them as well and supply yellows, russets, different varieties, different fingerlings, and specialty items as well. The other big thing that FSN offers is a lot of those specialty items, things like steamables and bakeables and all of those items that they offer. Again, we don't package those items, but we can still use the network to be able to service customers if that's something that they want.
Now, you're in the Red River Valley, which you talked about already, which is right at the border of North Dakota and Minnesota in the upper central part of the United States. How was the growing season this year? Because last year, I know, was a tough one, especially at harvest. A lot of potatoes got left in the ground.
Yes, the 2019 was definitely an extremely wet year. Coming into harvest time last year, everything looked really well, and then it just wouldn't stop raining. And there was a lot of drowned out, and then it snowed early, and it definitely wasn't ideal. This year, again, we had a really good growing season. Harvest got a little bit dry when it came time to do the harvesting, but for the most part, most areas were able to kind of work through it. And in the end, you know, production was obviously up from the year before, but things really, really turned out pretty well. The quality looks pretty well, and the supply is back up pretty much closer to normal. It's down just slightly still, but definitely better than 2019. And glad to see reds getting back out on everybody's table and through the supply chain.
And how about yields and qualities? How are those stacking up from what you've heard?
Yeah, for the most part, at least I know for sure from us, our yields were pretty much average, if not even slightly above average. And our quality, again, you know, it can always be a little bit spotty, but for the most part was very good. And that seems to be the trend up and down the valley too, as everybody is obviously shipping by now, and things are looking pretty good. So we should be able to service everybody that we need to much more normally than last year.
For those that have never visited the valley, could you describe a little bit what the conditions are like there and what the typical growing season is like?
Yep. So we typically plant late May and into June. There's definitely been growers who plant late June and early July, but typically the late May into June is the best time to plant. We in the Red River Valley definitely have a very dynamic weather pattern. We can be, you know, extremely cold, obviously in the winter. We're below zero, but even within the growing season, we can have, you know, bouts of where it gets down into the, you know, maybe low 50s and it gets quite wet. And then we can have a 100-degree day, you know, virtually in a couple of days time. So the weather pattern is always a little bit challenging. Come harvest time, which is typically the beginning of August and through October, kind of the same thing. It can be super hot when we start harvest up to, you know, 90 to 100 degrees. And then by October, we've had snow at the beginning of October. We've had lots of rain. And we've also had beautiful days where, you know, it's 60 degrees. So it's definitely an interesting growing area. The weather pattern is definitely odd, but the thing we have to our advantage is definitely the Red River Valley soil. The valley was an old lake, a glacier lake bed. So that made the soil very rich. It's very black. It's very fertile. It's some of the best farming and growing land really in the nation or possibly in the world. So there are definitely advantages to being in the valley. It's very flat. And so sometimes when it rains a lot, it doesn't drain perfectly, but really the soil condition is perfect. And for the most part, it's probably one of the best places to be farming if you look at it like that, I guess.
Now you deal specifically with reds, and the Red River Valley is very much known for reds. What's some of the history there, and why do so many growers there deal with reds? Is it the short growing season, or how did that all come to be?
Yeah, I was asking a couple of the guys in the office because I wasn't really sure if there was, you know, a little bit of a history on why reds are so popular here, and nobody seemed to really know. So we kind of have to think that it's because reds grow really well in dark black soil. And people grow yellows in the area, and there's some russets that grow in the area and stuff as well. But the red varieties definitely do very well in that rich black soil. And then, like you said, the growing season, since we do have a fairly short window, that's just what works the best. Any other variety that needs longer to grow doesn't usually work, because we're lucky if we get, you know, end of May to beginning of August for a good growing season. So I would definitely have to say that it would be the soil, and then just the growing conditions, the time frame for that for sure.
Switching gears a little bit, nobody escaped the COVID impacts this year. What's been the fallout for you guys as far as what you've had to deal with, and whether it's precautions you've had to take in the packing shed or whatever? What have you guys been dealing with?
We definitely lucked out a little bit due to the short season last year, right when COVID was kind of ramping up the middle of March, we were done washing. So we had laid off about half of our crew by that time. So we're able to take a lot of precautions for COVID pretty easily with, you know, about half or 20 or so of our crew. But definitely, you know, made sure that we put in any kind of precaution that we could. With less people, it was much easier to be able to spread out. We had some people working from home at that time, things like that. When everybody came back, same thing. We just made sure that we had, you know, PPE available, and we were able to space out the best that we can, hired a custodian to do some extra cleaning, things like that. So, you know, the supply for potatoes really picked up in the end of the spring there last year, and so that too was good. We learned we could do a little bit of repacking, which we hadn't done in the past, and we're just able to try to keep our customer supplied with the potatoes that they needed. So while it's definitely been a challenge, there have been some good things that have kind of come out of it, whether it's been us being able to adjust and kind of test our flexibility and adaptability to increase supply for potatoes for, you know, short periods of time as well.
Do most of your potatoes go to the retail market then?
Yeah, I would say the majority of them do. We do do a few food service shipments and stuff as well, which obviously is considerably down compared to other years. But for the most part, they make their way to retail at the end. Yep.
Now, you were promoted to CEO earlier this year, just in time for the pandemic. What's your first year been like, and what challenges? I mean, obviously going into this, you couldn't have expected what was coming, and yet you're assuming a new leadership role or a larger leadership role.
Right. It definitely has been interesting. Coming off of the 2018 short crop year, that was about halfway over in my transition. And then adding all of the COVID challenges, it's definitely been interesting. I will say that I feel like, you know, surviving a super short crop year and a pandemic all in my first year, I feel like, my goodness, we should be ready for pretty much anything and everything if we can get through those things. So I definitely think, you know, we've got a great team here. The majority of our employees have been here, you know, 10 plus years. So being able to just put people in the right place and rely on their experience and their knowledge and commitment to the company has been huge in the transition of being able to adapt to a short crop or a pandemic and being able to focus on those things and not have to worry about, yes, the plant's running and we're still getting potatoes out the door and things like that. So while it's been challenging, it definitely has been really a great learning opportunity.
We're going to take just a quick break here for a message from our sponsor. Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The team at 1-4 Group has a solution for you. Their biocontrol 1-4 site has proven time and again to be the best sustainable option for delivering high quality potatoes. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast. A lot of people I talk to, like, they might have a background in agronomy and they grew up farming or whatever, but you have a background in education and business. You have a very unique skill set that you bring to the table. Could you deal a little bit of your background and where you started to where you've come now?
So my father was the first employee actually in 1979 when they first opened. I was born a couple of years later. So really I've been involved in Nakoda Packers in some way, shape or form since the very beginning. I often went out to the field with my dad if he was going to do any kind of field checking. I came to work a lot with him and, rode on the forklift or just even hung out in the office. Their business manager that they had for years, I spent a lot of time pretending I was her, sitting on her lap, asking questions. So really it started out early. I did, however, when I graduated from high school, went to college and graduated with a bachelor's degree in education and went to teach high school for about a year and a half after college. I always kind of wanted to be a teacher. I always really envisioned myself as a teacher. So that was really the plan and quite opposite of what I'm doing now. But my husband and I got pregnant with twins and we were living a couple of states away and really kind of were like, we need to get home and be closer. And so they kind of just made a position for me here. And then I worked my way from, I started out as an admin assistant and did some food safety and did some employee safety and some HR and all kinds of accounting work and kind of just did whatever they needed to be done and learned a lot about the business in my first 10 or so years. And then I moved into the director of operations role and did that for a few years as well. And then I was, what did I do after that? Oh, the COO for a couple of years, just in the transition before I took over as CEO. So really been involved for basically my lifetime and an employee of the company for about 15 years or so. So
now you start as an admin assistant in a position that was essentially created. I mean, did you ever envision that you would be running the company 15 years later?
No, not really. I mean, being that it was kind of in the family business, my dad did buy in and is an owner a few, probably about 10 years after he was hired or so. But still, for myself, I thought, I'll probably work here, for a few years, doing some admin stuff, maybe a little accounting. And then I really thought I'd probably get back into teaching. I really like teaching. But what I found was the more I kind of learned at my positions at Nakoda, I still was able to use a lot of my teaching skills and get some of that out of my job here, whether it was employee safety or HR training or food safety training or things like that. I was able to kind of still continue my desire to learn, but then also pass on what I've learned to any of our employees and all of our employees really here as well. So the longer I stayed, the more I kind of advanced. And then obviously we, started talking about the interest in moving into more of the CEO position and working with Steve Tweeten, our former CEO, on what that would kind of look like and things like that. It fairly quickly, probably about 10 years in to me working here, was really something that we started working towards and I got more and more excited about.
Now on the teaching front, and you mentioned that you kind of get that fulfillment out of your job and being in a leadership role. Now, a lot of, growers, like I said, have that history in agronomy and, have their hands in the dirt and they're great at that. Every farm is a business and requires that business sense. With that note, do you have any advice for like the smaller farms on the business side of things? I mean, are there mistakes that you often see made, that any advice that you could give a smaller, medium-sized farm to make sure they have their business in line?
I would definitely say, one thing that we've seen here is, having good processes and procedures kind of set up, whether it's, money coming in, make sure you track what's coming in and you get things in timely deposit wise. And same with on, when you're paying things, make sure you're tracking, what are you paying? Have a good system for making sure things are paid on time. And then one of the big ones that I don't necessarily see with farms, but just in business in general, is checks and balances. Making sure that, you know, it's not just one person bringing in money and paying money out. Having somebody, whether it's an outside source or just more than one person, kind of taking a look at and making sure that they know how much money is coming in, how much money is going out, where is it coming from, where is it going to, and just making sure that accounting for me has always been fun and I really like it. I know it's not always our growers, you know, most fun thing to do, and bookwork isn't always on the top of everyone's list, but the more that you can have a process and a procedure and some kind of tracking system, the easier it is, whether it comes to tax time or any kind of questions that come up. If you can look it up quickly, due to your process and your procedure, I think you're much further ahead, whether it be time-wise or possibly even earnings and losses as well.
That's really interesting you brought up checks and balances, because so many farms start out as family organizations and then they wind up, they get passed down, and you've got two brothers or something, or a cousin and a sister or something. And I've heard just horror stories about, you know, you have one that kind of takes over the business side of things, and then the other one takes over the farming side and doesn't know what's going on with the business. And it, by the time there's a mess, it's too late.
Right. So, sure. Yeah.
So that's a great advice. So back to Fresh Solutions Network. You're going to be stepping into the role of vice chair this year. What does that mean for you, and what's that going to entail?
Yeah, so I'm really excited. I've been involved with the Fresh Solutions Network probably for about 3 years. While Steve, our former CEO, was on the board and involved with it, I kind of traveled around and did a lot of things with him for that, going to board meetings and such, really getting to know how the network works. And then the last year, then I've been on the board myself, and it's a really neat group. There's a lot of very, very good established companies, farmers, grower, packer, shippers that are in our group. And so just the amount of knowledge and experience, innovative minds, things like that, that are in that group is just really exciting. Nakoda's pretty small. On the scale of, you know, the size of company that we are. And so just being able to kind of mix and work with some companies that are quite a bit bigger than us and that do some different things as far as packing and shipping is just really exciting. So becoming vice chair, I'll just get, you know, a little bit more experience and a leadership role, pushed into a little bit more of the produce industry. And I think some of maybe that experience that I'm lacking a little bit. So I'm excited to just learn a lot from that group, and be able to bring that back to Nakoda as well.
Any favorite examples of maybe something you took away from one of those larger farms or packers that you guys have implemented into your operation?
Oh gosh. I would say, you know, working with a lot of those companies has really kind of just expanded our network of customers and being able to kind of push our limits to service customers. Before we were in the FSN network, we did a little bit of brokering where we might sell somebody else's potatoes to one of our customers to make sure they're serviced longer. But once we joined that group, that part of our business really blew up. And that's been a big deal for us, whether it's profit-wise or more importantly, just being able to service our customers almost year-round. And a lot of that is just thanks to either business that we got from those partners in the FSN group or encouragement of, you know, try this and we do this, and just a lot of help that way. So that's really been huge. Some of the other things are just, you know, little things that they're doing within their company, whether it be employee recognition things that they talk about and benefits and things like that, that you kind of in side conversations learn about, have really been neat. You know, you can be in a lot of different groups. A lot of times some of the leadership groups that I've been involved in, they're not necessarily produce specific. So being that FSN is a group of potato and onion farmers, that's been really neat just to be able to apply it right back to, they also are, they're growing potatoes, they're washing, they're packing, they're shipping potatoes. So some of those processes and just kind of talking about amongst the group, you know, what's working for you guys? Are you having labor shortages? Are you, you know, what are you doing during COVID? Has been really an invaluable place for some networking and assistance and encouragement.
And that's a great point about labor. That's something that I hear universally is, I don't care what you do in agriculture, it's, you're struggling to get those bodies. So any tips that people can get on those, I'm sure are valuable.
Definitely.
As far as you guys are a big part of the supply chain in you know, getting the potatoes clean, packed, and where they need to go, has COVID really revealed anything in the supply chain that you look at and think, wow, we could do this better, or maybe we need to tweak this? Or do you chalk it up as it just was a weird once in a lifetime thing?
You know, obviously we hope it's kind of a once in a lifetime thing, but it has brought really some good things for us. At the end of our spring season last year, we were short on potatoes. And we're presented the opportunity of, you know, would you guys ever repack potatoes? So bring them in from somewhere else and just do some packaging. And we had done that years ago and it had worked okay, but they weren't really wild about trying it again. Mm-hmm. And we let the guys that worked down on the floor kind of figure out, could we do this? They were able to put into place a system and they just kept kind of perfecting the system. And in the end, it was a really great opportunity to be able to find out, hey, when we're down and not running, washing, packing here, that's another business opportunity and really a, being able to service the customer's opportunity that we can do. So there's been, you know, a few opportunities like that where, you know, even in a labor situation, we don't have a lot of people applying for jobs. We have a lot of people that return. We just have a hard time filling those positions that are maybe new or kind of revolving. And so it's given the everybody kind of an opportunity to figure out how can we do more with less people. And for the most part, you know, it actually has worked out very well. While COVID is definitely, you know, a global pandemic and is very sad and very serious, it has presented some growing opportunities for us too. So we hope that, you know, it's nearing the end and we've learned a lot of things from it. And yes, we definitely hope that we don't see something like this again in our lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, the food supply chain is so well oiled and it's rigid. And most of the time that works out great for you. But so yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at is if, you know, presented anything, you know, obvious of, no, this is going to be a problem. We can do this better. But obviously some great opportunities for you guys and a chance to have that leeway and pivot within your walls. So good deal there. Yeah. One thing I always like to ask guests is, what is your favorite way to eat potatoes?
Oh, man, that's a hard one. I would say lately it has been, we like to take like the B or C size potatoes and cook them in our air fryer.
Okay.
That's been probably one of our most favorite things lately. One, it's quick. You know, we can throw them in there for 18 minutes or so and they get nice and crispy on the outside and still nice and done on the inside. Second for sure is just an unwrapped baked potato. Red potato. It get your skin kind of gets crispy. You don't have to use a lot of butter or sour cream. But honestly, we make pretty much everything with the potato, whether we cut them and bake them, mash them. We eat a lot of potatoes and I have to say I like them in pretty much every way, shape or form, to be honest.
Any advice on the air fryer thing? I mean, you just leave them unwrapped and just bake them plain like that?
Yeah, we usually just spray a little bit of some kind of oil on them and put salt and pepper on them and throw them in there. And that's the nice part too. It takes little to no work. My kids can do it. My husband can do it, and it takes, you know, 18 to 20 minutes, and they're perfect.
Well, because they're smaller, I mean, do you need to puncture them or anything during the cooking?
No.
Okay.
No.
Good deal. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Well, thanks, Carissa. That's all I really had. I think that's a good place to wrap up. Again, this has been The Potato Field with Spudman. Thank you to our guest today, Carissa Olson at Nakota Packers in the Red River Valley. Carissa, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and your crew there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to 1-4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at 1-4group.com. We'll see you next time.